Hi, everyone. This is John Robbins, and welcome to Rosalind from Normal Developers. You probably no doubt heard that heard about Rosalind if you've paid any attention to the Microsoft world for the last few years. And you know, an open source compiler is a pretty cool thing. But you're probably thinking, hey, I'm a web developer, a server developer, WPF developer. I don't have a PhD in compilerology. Why should I care about this Rosalind thing? Well, I'm here to convince you that you should care a ton. Normally, a compiler is a black hole. Source code goes in and a compiled binary comes out. There's no way to extend or change or reuse the compiler. With Rosalind, the entire compiler is opened up with a clean and consistent API that allows you to do things like reuse the parser, add new keywords, and most importantly for you and I, add new code checks and fixes. As a normal developer, you're developing libraries, and you want those libraries to be used correctly. By having the ability to extend the compiler, you can now write rules called analyzers that verify whatever you want. These analyzers run as part of the compiler and inside the IDE. And once you find an error, you want to help the user correct the problem found by your rule, which is called a code fix. And those are also run as part of the IDE. Let that sink in for a minute. Now you have easy access to extending the compiler to help produce the best code possible. That's why you should care. In our journey today, I'm joined by Jamie Dixon, the illustrious and brilliant Jamie Dixon, as moderator, and I can't thank him enough for helping out. If you've got questions, just type them into the message area, and Jamie will answer directly and save up good ones for various points in the presentation. On this slide here, you can see my contact information, my blog information, and Jamie's contact information as well. If you have any other comments or questions about Rosalind, please feel free to reach out to either one of us. Now, there's one other thing I want to mention before we start, and that I've done a lot of presentations over my career, and there's something I've always wanted to do, and that's finally happening today here at the MVP Virtual Conference. I have always wanted to do a presentation naked. Thank you so much for helping me realize my dream. I don't know if that was too much information. Anyway, let's get started. Now, I'm not going to cover a whole lot of Rosalind here, and I hope you think it's okay I get out of PowerPoint. Oops, I clicked on the wrong thing there. So, what we're going to talk about here today is this thing called Rosalind. And you can read more about that. Just go search for Rosalind, search for C# open source, and you'll find a whole lot of information about that. But what I'm going to cover here is a quick definition of demos of just what an analyzer and a code fix are, just so everybody make sure everybody sees those. Then we're going to answer the question, how do I use analyzers and code fixes in my project? Because there's a whole bunch of us that are out there writing these analyzers and code fixes. I've got the code for some of mine I'm going to show you later up on the screen, and a lot of them are open source, so you can look at those. But how do I consume those? Then we're going to turn to, how do I write my own? I have an idea. I wish the compiler would check for X. Well, let's talk about how to write those analyzers and talk about Y, which is how to fix that error that you found. And we're also going to talk about how to test them. You're going to find out that it's a whole lot easier than you think to develop these analyzers and code fixes. So let's get in. So the first thing I want to talk about is the definitions. Right? Analyzers find errors and code fixes fix them. Essentially, analyzers, like I mentioned, that's your way of adding the better information to the compiler. So just to give you an idea how cool these things are, you don't have to write any UI or anything else. They're all part of the compiler. So you build your analyzer, you tell the compiler this is a new error or a warning or informational that I want to produce. And here's what's great about these analyzers and code fixes, they're available for all editions of Visual Studio, everything from community all the way to enterprise. Now, why do you want to write one of these analyzers? I briefly mentioned it before, and it's because you have a library or you have an API that you want to make sure people use correctly. This is your chance to do that. So if you've written some cool API for handling JSON, well, why don't you write some analyzers that make sure people are calling the API in the right order? If you see that there's a call to the foo method followed by a call to bar, you can say, wait a minute, you need to swap those, for example. Whatever it is to help people use your library, and that's the intent, is that these will be distributed as part of libraries. Now, a code fix, that's a convenience to help folks when you do find an error. So what's nice about the code fixes is that they occur right inside the IDE. So the idea is you assist them in fixing the error. Now, you don't have to write a code fix, right? It's perfectly fine to just say, hey, here's an error, and leave it up to the user to fix it. But if there's an easy way to fix it, well, go ahead and help automate that. So I want to show you just very quickly what an analyzer and an error analyzer and code fix looks like. So I'm going to sit in this program here, and I've got a little bit of a problem in this application, don't I? Right? I've got some errors. And let's just pick this one here. Notice we've got the little dot. This is an analyzer. You're thinking, well, that's a compiler error. No, that's exactly what an analyzer is. It's a compiler error. And the code fix for this is we can click on the link button there, and we can get code fixes for that particular analyzer. And you can have multiple code fixes for a particular analyzer, because notice we have multiple compiler errors down there. So you know, you're using this in your day-to-day development already with Visual Studio 2015. And what's great about this is that, guess what? You can just plug into this system. You don't have to do any WPF. You don't have to do any UI development. You just get to take advantage directly of this. So that's pretty cool. Now let's talk about, I want to use analyzers in my application. So first off, what do you got to think about? It's three words, NuGet, NuGet, and NuGet. Everything you're going to do related to analyzers is up on NuGet. Right? They're just NuGet packages that automatically add. And if you want to look for your analyzers that are up on NuGet, you can search for Roslyn analyzers. In fact, I guess I've gamed the system, because the one I wrote shows up first. But there's a lot of wonderful analyzers out here, that like my Wintellect analyzers. There's a bunch written by the .NET team, the runtime analyzers. You have some very, very interesting ones from Sam Harwell. These StyleCop analyzers, he's re-implemented StyleCop as analyzers. And it's a great project, great open source project with a really clean architecture. And so you can learn a lot from that, looking at the code for that. You know, Microsoft has re-implemented most of FXCop as analyzers. So we've got just NuGet packages that we can add directly in. So we'll go back to this project here, and I'll go add the Wintellect analyzers, for example, into our system here. So this is pretty simple to do. You've all probably used NuGet before. And I'll pick Wintellect.analyzers, and that way we can see. And all of these analyzers today are pre-release because you know, Visual Studio is not fully RTM'd. When it RTMs, we'll get the right thing. So there, we just added this analyzer to our project. Now, how do you know an analyzer has been added to the project? Well, right, it's your standard NuGet stuff, but where they show up is under references. And then there's your analyzer link under references. And if we click on that, you can see the particular individual analyzers that have been added through NuGet. And then here's the errors and analyzers that have been added. So we've, you know, there's all the analyzers I've written. And just to show you that this is truly happening here, that my analyzers are all loaded, you know, like one of my pet peeves is when people put the curly brace up on, oops, I've got it in my editor set. We'll just throw an argument exception. Pretty standard stuff. Okay. But if we go up here to this line and I press Control Dot, save the file, Well, here's one. I don't like the lowercase strings, so here is my one of my errors here that will look for lowercase string and suggest that you turn it into the uppercase one. So we can find the specific error and go take a look at that. So there's your analyzers that are that's it. That's all you have to do to add the analyzers. And when you've got the various ones up here around on NuGet, once they're added to the project, they're part of the project forever. So that means that you go to your build server, you're getting the benefit of these analyzers. So this is pretty cool stuff, and I think I'm very excited about it because it allows us to solve some really hard problems. So let's go look at, that's how to use them. Let's go look at how to write your own. And I'll flip back to the second slide I have here because this has got all the important links on it. Right. If you want to write your own analyzer and code fix, we have any version of Visual Studio works. You'll need the Visual Studio 2015 SDK, the .NET Compiler Platform Syntax Visualizer, and the .NET Compiler Platform SDK templates. Now you're probably wondering, well, what's the .NET Compiler Platform? That's the actual name, the official name of Roslyn. Everybody else calls it Roslyn except for marketing people at Microsoft. Those are the four things you need, and you're ready to go. But before we jump into creating a project and looking at it, we've got to talk a little bit of theory. Right, because you have to understand how Roslyn fits together so that we can see what's going on in the application. So the most important tool that you have is this syntax visualizer, because that's how you're going to learn Roslyn and see what's going on. So I'm going to flip over to our project here, and let's get back to normal. And what we're going to do is go look at that syntax visualizer, because there's a lot of important stuff in there. And once you've installed it, you can see the Roslyn syntax visualizer, right? It's just installed there. And this syntax visualizer is how you're going to learn Roslyn. So I can click on things, and the syntax visualizer is going to show me all the good stuff about this particular spot in the code. So what you're seeing here is when I click on that write line, we're seeing the tree, the syntax tree, that comes down to that particular token, right, and particular node in the tree. So you can see it's all the way down on this identifier token right here. And also what's kind of cool about this is that you can sit here and go, well, wait a minute, what's the expression statement? You can click on the expression statement and it highlights it in the code. So this makes it very easy to see what's going on and help you learn how to use Roslyn to do some good things. So the first thing I want to talk about is the colors, because we have to talk about what these nodes are so that you can understand the information that you're processing here. So the blue colors, in fact, let me show you a pretty cool thing here so it might make it a little easier to see what's going on. So I can right click anywhere in here and view directed syntax graph. And what this will do is it will generate that was not a good one. Let me do the expression syntax. And this will generate a DGML graph of the tree. And this is a very interesting way, and this is something that's helped me tremendously figure out how does all of this stuff fit together. And this syntax visualizer, I happen to be showing it for C#. It works the exact same way for VB. So we can see the difference. In fact, it's kind of interesting to compare them side by side. I've got a VB the exact same VB program here, and we'll bring up the syntax visualizer, and we'll go back to, notice there's an expression statement here. Let's right click and view the directed graph. And that might look very familiar to you, because if we go back to the C# directed graph, right, this is C#, that's VB. Gosh, looks kind of similar, doesn't it? There's some little differences with the greens, but that's what's neat about one of the neat things about Roslyn is that it's pretty much the same thing between the languages. So this the important thing here are the colors, and the colors tell us what we're looking at to understand what's going on. So the first color I want to talk about are the blue nodes. Anything that's in blue in the syntax visualizer are blue in the syntax DGML. These are the highest level items in Roslyn and are nearly identical between the languages. Thus, if you wanted to write a rule that worked for both C-sharp and VB, you would want to process syntax nodes. Okay, right. If you ever took a compiler class in college and they talked about the abstract syntax tree, that's essentially what the nodes are. That's how you can kind of keep it straight if you've taken the compiler class. So that's the top level. And if, in fact, if we flip through and we look at the differences here, right? Yeah, there are some differences in languages, but hey, there's an expression statement and there's an expression statement. So there's a lot of similarities, but you know there are differences because the languages are different. Now, once you've got the nodes, right, the highest level, next level down are the green colors, and those are the syntax tokens. These are the individual numbers, words, and so on that the parser found, and these are language specific. So if we go dig in here, you know, we see that there's a semicolon. In fact, we'll dig into this expression statement, console.writeLine, and you'll see there's a dot token. Well, if we go over to VB, well, there's a dot token. But remember, those are green, so those are specific. So VB has its dot token because it's a different language, and so does C#. So we have the syntax tokens. The third part of the stuff that we're taking a look at here is trivia. So if I click in this white space area, so you have the white space dots turned on so you can see, you see some red nodes in here. And because one of the contracts of Roslyn is that if you consume a source file and bring it into a Roslyn tree, right, the syntax visualizer there, you can round trip it. So that means that if you take a.cs, pull it into a Roslyn syntax tree and then write it out as b.cs, they are going to be identical files. So anything that is not a syntax token or syntax node or a syntax token, that's like white space and everything else, that falls into those red nodes. That's called syntax trivia. Okay, and you know, like the StyleCop analyzer I talked about a moment ago, that's a great one that works with a lot of syntax trivia. So if you have an idea for an analyzer that looks to see, hey, are people, you know, maybe you're really harsh about four spaces and tabs. Well, you would write an analyzer that would work with that syntax trivia. And the final type of node that you'll see is what's called a diagnostic. And a diagnostic is a node that has got the background color of pink. Okay, I hope you're not colorblind here. This is an error. And this is something that confused me a little bit when I first started working with Roslyn. A diagnostic, that means an error. Okay, that's what they call it. You think in terms of error list and compiler errors and things like that, but Roslyn terms, it's a diagnostic. So I have this undefined type here, and the tree is showing me the path to that undefined type. So this is not a compilable unit, right? The compilation unit there, it would fail. So the reason I want to point this out about the diagnostics is when you're writing rules, you want to make sure, hey, I want this rule to look for X, Y, and Z, but if there's any errors, I don't want to do anything. And some of my rules in Wintellect.analyzers, that's what they have to do because I don't want to be looking at the code if it's ill-formed. I only want to be looking at fully formed code. So there's our four nodes, right? We start at the top with the syntax node. Next level down is the language-specific stuff, which is the tokens. Then we have the trivia, the white space and all of that. And then if there's errors, you have the diagnostics. That's it for the theory. You really don't need a whole lot of stuff to kind of see how all of this fits together. Okay. So this is all pretty cool, right? We've got this wonderful tool. In fact, the best piece of advice I can give you when it comes to Roslyn, pay attention to that syntax visualizer. I just leave it, you know, when I first started learning it, I just leave it open all the time and say, well, what is this? What is that? Because, it, you know, like I said, it automatically expands. It automatically puts you to the spot that you're looking at. So you very, very, very quickly get a very good feel for what do these syntax trees look like. And it's pretty darn interesting. And yeah, I think it's a real testament to what the folks at Microsoft did to come up with a very clean way of describing things that are really hard. So we've talked about all of these nodes, but let's dig in a little bit deeper because we've got another concept that we have to talk about. And if we go look at this invocation expression here, right, there's my call to console.WriteLine, and excellent, right? So I've highlighted the invocation expression there, and you can see at the bottom of the syntax visualizer here, we get to see a bunch of all the properties off of that invocation expression. So this is pretty cool because this will, you know, once you ask for an invocation expression, you say, hey, I want to look for calls to console.WriteLine. So you ask for an invocation expression syntax node, and hey, it returns, there's the expression, there's the argument list, right? This is pretty cool stuff. You get all of this. You get the exact spot where it is. You know, does it contain any diagnostics? Are there any errors in there? You know, what language is it? Whatever it is, as well as the parent node. So this is pretty cool. So that gives you a lot of information. But I want you to stop and think for a minute. Think about this. What call is this? You see a call to console.WriteLine. But if you remember your runtime, there's 19 overloaded methods to console.WriteLine. Also, is there anything stopping me from creating wintellect.console.WriteLine? So how do you know which one it is? So we have the syntax nodes, syntax tokens, and the trivia that describe the tree, but we have to go one step further and ask for the symbol. This is the actual representation of that call. So we know this is an invocation expression, but I want to see the symbol, the exact call. So that's where you can right-click on the item, and you can say, what is this, by asking for its symbol. And that will return the type and kind. I really wish that would, this is open source, I need to go fix this. I wish this would say, you know, symbol information, so it's a little more obvious as to what you're looking at. But now that we've got the symbol information here, now we're getting to see exactly what the call is. So is there, everybody see why that is spaced like this? Because we've got this invocation expression, and now we can figure out the exact call because we can see the constructed from, we can see the containing symbol, system.console, so I know this is a call to system.console.WriteLine, and I can see the containing assembly. So it's really important that you see this distinction. So sure, I can find whenever somebody called X, Y, or Z, but how do I know exactly what that call is? So that's where you go access the symbol information. So now you know about syntax nodes, syntax tokens, trivia, and the symbols, right? Remember, the symbols are the things that tell you the detailed information. So now you know how to look at Rosalind stuff. So let's go build an analyzer. And in the space of time here, we're not going to, you know, if you want to build an analyzer, it's pretty simple because you've got a nice extensibility project that does it for you, right? That's why we install the templates. So I've put this together, and we've got an analyzer that we're going to take a look at, but we need a real-world scenario that I want to look for. And the real-world scenario I want to handle is the scenario of debug.assert. So you know, if you've ever read my bio and or read any of the books that I've written, you know that I love I love debug.assert. I think this is the greatest API in the world. Okay? Nope. In fact, that's my I added the I've already got the rules here because I've added the analyzers. I was like, what's going on? So this has got a problem. There's multiple versions of debug.assert. And I want to be able to show you what you're supposed to be doing. So debug.assert by itself is not good. You always want to use the multiple parameter version of debug.assert because when the message box or your assert overload triggers, a good assert uses this information to tell you why you're asserting. So I want to write an analyzer that goes and looks for calls to debug.assert and then says, whoa, 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 you've used the single parameter version. You need to be using the two parameter version. So that's the analyzer I want to write. And what I want to do after that is write a code fix that says, here's that call to debug.assert. What I want to do is I want to take the first parameter and add that as a string afterwards, right? So that's the rule that we're going to develop. It's a good rule because you shouldn't be using the single parameter version of debug.assert. So basically, when you're writing an analyzer, you can think of the analyzers as they're all callbacks. They're all hooked up with the Managed Extensibility Framework, or MEF. And you basically tell the compiler, call me when you encounter A. And you ask for a particular syntax node or syntax token. What is it that you want to be called back for? So I've got the call to debug.assert here. So what do I want to look at? I want to look for, right, an invocation expression. And why do I want the invocation expression? Well, because that's got the argument list with it. And that's a property of the syntax node that I can say, okay, what is the value of your parameters, right? It's just a list. And that way I can say, okay, from that call, I now want to go look at the parameters. And if it's a single parameter version, I want to flag it as an error. So I've used the syntax visualizer to go grab that information there. So that's the plan. Okay, we're going to build this analyzer and make it happen. So to save us some time, I've already filled this out so we don't have to watch the live coding. And I've created a project here that's got all, you know, just your standard project I just showed you, you know, from the template, the analyzer with code fix. And when you build the initial project, it's got a dummy analyzer and dummy code fix in it. I've taken those out and replaced them with the rules, but I'm going to take you through them slowly so you can see what's going on. But let's talk very briefly about what gets created as part of the project. First, you have your analyzer and your code fix. That's the assembly that contains it. And oh, look at this. Microsoft loves us, so they gave us a test project as well, and I'm going to show you how to test them. And the last thing here is a VizX. Now, I haven't talked about the VizX because you don't use those. You should never install an analyzer as a VizX, because analyzers should be part of the project. There is a reason for using VizX, because one of the things that you can do with the Roslyn is write a code refactorer. That's beyond the scope of what we're talking about here. That gets into writing UI and some other things. But if you're writing a code refactorer, those are installed as a VizX. But as a developer and a user, you should not be installing the VizX, which is your analyzers, because the problem is those are not part of the project. So the default template gives you one. Now, when it comes to testing and building your and testing your particular analyzer and code fix, it's kind of convenient to have the VizX there. Because like what I do is I write a rule and then I go download a whole bunch of source code from GitHub, you know, the Roslyn project and everything else, because I want to run as much code as possible through it, but I don't want to go change all of those projects to use NuGet, so I'll use the VizX for testing. But you never distribute the VizX, you'll never use that. That's my opinion. So great, we've got our project, and let's go write an analyzer. So let's go first write the analyzer. We're going to look for the individual calls to debug.assert. So let's talk a little bit about what the code is here that's generated. First off, is the most important thing here is your ID. This is the ID that is reported in the error window. And this ID is pretty important, because this is how you tell the IDE this analyzer and this code fix belong together. So here it's inside the project. You can put it outside the project, but you must keep it consistent. Then we've got some setup here, because Visual Studio is internationalized to 14 different languages. So they're using localizable resource strings to pull that information in. I encourage you to continue to do that, because folks that speak Korean kind of want to see things in their language. So that way you're ready to go. Now, since this is all done through MEF, that doesn't support the standard satellite loading stuff. So that's why we have to use the localizable resource string, which is a type out of the Rosalind itself. But you can see we give it the title of our analyzer, the message format, and the description. I've already filled those out for us, and we'll see those in a little bit. And you can assign a category. I think it's kind of funny that the default template localizes everything but the category. But the category is only used to display the properties, as I showed you earlier. So that's kind of the setup stuff. That's the description of it. But let's get to the creation of it. And here's the diagnostic descriptor. This is where you create your analyzer and you tell Rosalind, here's my analyzer, please use it. Now, we haven't registered it or anything else, but there's a lot of good information in this diagnostic descriptor, right? You see they're passing in the ID, the message format, title, and all of that. But one thing I want to spend a second on here is the severity. So we've got different severity levels, right? You can say it's an error. Oops, sorry. It's an error, right? Stop compilation, right? It's hidden. Don't really use that one a whole lot. A warning, which makes sense. And info. And you might be wondering, well, it makes sense for errors and warnings. I understand those. Errors means just stop the build. Warning means this isn't so hot. But why would you want to use info? Because the info is actually pretty useful. One of the rules I wrote in Wintellect.analyzers is I look for calls to methods that take parameters inside loops. Because remember your .NET, if you have a parameter, what has to happen is that .NET has to create an array and allocate memory and then make the call. They do that under the hood for you. So they're, if you're calling a parameter method inside a loop, you're allocating a lot more memory than you expect. Well, I wanted a rule that would say, hey, you got a parameter call here. Did you really mean to do that? Well, I don't want to make that a warning or an error because you may not have the choice of calling that particular method because of the API. But I want you to know that, hey, you've got a parameter call inside this loop. And you can look at that in the Wintellect.analyzer source code. But I thought that was a perfect example of using the different levels. Now, so, you know, we've got other things here about, you know, is it enabled, you know, the description. You can also put in help URLs so people can go to the help for your particular rule. And you can look at the source code for, you know, my rules or the StyleCop rules to see that. Now, out of the analyzer, you can say, we've got this guy. Here's the rules I support. And you can see that, you know, it's an immutable array. So you can support 50 analyzers inside a single class. You probably don't want to do that. Most people are writing one analyzer per class. But if they're pretty closely related, you can actually do multiple analyzers. So that's kind of, okay, here's my analyzer. There I've served it up by overriding the supported diagnostics. Let's talk about initialization. Because now here's where you start telling Rosalind, here's the work that I want to do. So let me get some things hidden for you here, because we'll walk through everything that's going on here. So the initialize method. Now, you're given a context, and that's the analysis context where you're being called from. And let's talk about what you can register for. You can register, right? Notice that some names should look familiar, right? Let's talk it symbol, right? I talked about symbol tokens. Well, you can access the symbol token. You can access a particular node. Like, I want to be called back when you find invocation expressions, for example. You can also do things like at the start of a block, right? In C#, a curly brace, opening curly brace, and, you know, at the beginning of a sub in VB. So that, you know, you register to say, I want to be called back when, and here's the different locations. So in our rule here, we want to be called back when debug.assert is called. And as we saw, that was an invocation expression. So how I'm going to write my rule here that we're going to do here is I'm going to register a syntax node. And the important thing here is that I specify the expressions I want to be called back for. So if we look, the first parameter is the method to get called. The second parameter is what types you want to be called back for. And what's pretty cool about this is that as you can see there, it takes an array or a parameter array of various items to be called. So you can say, hey, I want to write a rule that looks at loops. Well, you could write a rule, say, for this register syntax node action, I want to be called back with a syntax kind of the .for keyword or a syntax kind of the .while keyword. So you could build up a rule that looks for all possible loops inside the code. So you're basically saying when you're building the tree, Roslyn, hand it to me this way. So cool. We've just we just registered up our action right there, and we're ready to go. So that's the simple thing. And there's nothing stopping you from doing multiple actions. Okay, that's what's pretty cool about all of this. So let's do the analysis, right? So I've got my method here: analyze the debug.assert call. And so remember, what we want to do is we want to look for the method debug.assert. So I've registered to be called with an invocation expression, right? So that's going to call me back whenever there's a method call. So I've got to do a couple of things in this context here that I'm passed. Syntax node analysis context. This has got several very interesting things off of it. The first is the node. That's the node in the tree that you're being called on. And I've asked to be called back on the invocation expressions. But if you look closely at the node there, you can see that it's a syntax node. So you might have to do some casting to pull it up. You know, we've got various options to, you know, we can set report diagnostics is another thing we can call off this. This is how you report an error. We'll see that in a moment. We can look at the semantic model, right? I need to get the symbol for this particular location. Okay, so now that you know about the node, what we can do is go check, give me that node as an invocation expression syntax, because that's what I asked for. So great, we've figured out the node. Now we need to figure out, is this a call to debug.assert? So what are we going to do here? I'm going to ask that for the invocation expression syntax, and this has got a whole bunch of detailed information about the nodes, right, that are underneath it and above it, but I can also ask for, you know, things like the expression. And I'm going to do a very quick check here that says, hey, for this expression, is it debug.assert? Because remember, I'm getting called back on every single method call, so I want to get out of here quick. So this is a quick, easy way, and I've looked at the Roslyn code and verified that, wow, this is a pretty quick operation, right? You want to think about performance, because the last thing you want is a compiler taking a whole lot of time to, you know, because of these analyzers that you've got in play. So this gets me out quick, right, if it's not a debug.assert. If we continue, then we know it is a debug.assert call. So I want to come in here, and now we want to verify, is this the call with one argument? So I'm going to ask that invocation expression, right, for its arguments list. We saw that is in the syntax visualizer earlier, and that's got the property arguments and what's the count. And if the count is greater than one, I know it's a multi-parameter version of debug.assert, and I'm going to jump out. Now finally, we come in here. If we fall through this if statement, what do we know? We know it's a call to debug.assert that uses the one parameter version. So I'm going to report the error. And this create takes a whole bunch of different parameters, and you can pass in parameter arrays. So you can say this method is calling that. You know, so you can build up very nice rules. But I definitely want to give it the location, because I want that location to be triggered inside the code so that the user sees, here's the actual call to debug.assert that has a problem. So that's pretty simple, isn't it, right? This is what you find out. Now, obviously, big complicated rules that look for, you know, X, Y, and Z get pretty wild pretty quick, but, you know, this is a pretty cool thing. And this is one of the first rules I wrote in Roslyn, was this rule right here. And I was like, wow, this is a whole lot easier than I thought. So great, we've written our analyzer here. So we need to test this. We need to make sure this works. So sure, I could fire up Visual Studio and load a project and use the VizX, but, you know, we want something a little bit smaller. So let's go look at the unit tests for this rule. And the unit tests are pretty cool, pretty easy to use. And I'm just going to show them to you real quick because, well, they are simple. Basically, you take a string and you call verify C# diagnostic. So there, here's a call to debug.assert. Notice I've got the two-parameter version, so this should not report an error. So if this, if verify C-sharp diagnostic, which is all built in as part of the project here, of the unit test project, if that throws an error or has an error, that's going to fail my test. So how would I write a test that would look at an error? Well, very simply, same basic idea. I'm going to take my test. It's a string. And what am I going to do? What I'm going to do is manually build up the error. And that's what a diagnostic result, that's the exact same thing that we were building up over here. Okay, because if we look at that, that's a diagnostic. And we're going to build up the diagnostic result. And what does that have in it? That has the ID. It has the message. It has the severity. It has the location where it exists. Now, I do want to point something out with this analyzer here, is that the way the code is in the testing harness that comes with the default project, it's always called test0.cs or test0.vb, and this is the column the line and column where the error occurs. So you need to figure out the line and column. Guess what? You get the countdown, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's the 11th line, 13th character in. So that's where you come up with that little piece right there. So that's it. That's how, you know, that's how you test these analyzers, you know, so this way you can kind of build these very quickly. Now, I do have to mention here, the testing is nice. It really helps you get started. It's not perfect though, because, you know, especially as you start building bigger and more complicated rules, the fact that you're dealing with a string here is kind of a pain. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to load a file off disk or a whole Visual Studio project and run it? Well, we don't have that kind of extensibility yet. At the time of this presentation, the template is not open sourced, but talking with the Roslyn team, talking with fellow MVPs, a lot of us are going to be very active in extending this test project here so that we can do a lot more with it. You know, my friend Kathleen Dollard has got a lot of really good ideas on this, but, you know, just keep it, you know, I'm going to be blogging more about this because, you know, I've run into some problems where the testing framework needed to be changed. So as we build bigger rules and get more experience with this, hopefully our ideas will be accepted by the team and we will build a much stronger testing infrastructure. But, you know, one of the key things that I do need to mention here about the testing is I spent like 4 or 5 hours wrestling with a bug. And what I didn't realize, because this is a string, is that I had an error, a diagnostic error in the file or in the string, and so it was kicking out of my analyzer because I had an error in the code. So, you know, this is where some of the stuff breaks down. So I just thought it'd be worthwhile to mention that. But keep an eye on my blog, keep an eye on the Roslyn stuff up at GitHub, and you'll see some pretty good discussion about it. So that's it. We've developed our analyzer. Now let's go develop the code fix. Okay, so code fixes are a little more complicated because we've got to do a little more setup work for them. So let's get my regions chunked down so we can walk through what's going on here. So here's the standard stuff. It's basically, here's my code fix. Notice this is where it gets hooked up, right? These are the IDs that get passed together. This is how the analyzer and the code fix get put together. So they're saying, here it is, and this is why the IDs are so important. You'll never touch this. This is if the user says, go fix all of these errors in the code. Okay. Now, something I've got to mention here about analyzers and code fixes is everything is stateless about these guys. And so if you try to store state in your analyzer and then pass it over to your code fix, you've screwed up, right? These analyzers and code fixes are completely stateless. So don't, you know, never the twain shall meet. You're going to do the heavy lifting on these to pull that information in, and then you're going to have to redo it. Because if you start sharing information, because these syntax trees are immutable, right? Remember immutability with like strings in .NET? Same thing applies to these syntax trees. If you start storing state, you're screwed because the state has changed on you, because every time you add a node or the user types something, a whole new tree is built. So don't handle state or anything else in here. So that's why we're going to have to do some work to go pull this all of this together. So let's go on into registering our code fix. So this is where we have to do the setup and say, go call this particular method here. Right? I'm going to call a method down here that does the actual work, but we've got to do some registration work. And the first thing we have to do is I have to go get the tree. Right, so that, you know, this is almost always the first call that you make in a register code fix async. So give me the point where the error occurred, and that's what you're getting here with the context. I'm working on a document, which is an individual file, which is fine with me. You have other analyzers and code fixes that can work with solutions and whatnot, but I just give me the document and then go find the syntax tree for this reported error. Right, simple enough. So my analyzer reports one error. So what I need to do is go figure out where that error was reported. So I'm going to ask the context, get me the first analyzer, because I only report one error in my analyzer, right? Different analyzers could report multiple errors, depending on how you wrote it and what you were trying to analyze. So for me, just give me the first error, and that gives me my diagnostic. And it's pretty important here, where did this error occur? So I'm asking, where in the code did this occur? And a source span helps the tree figure out where it is, because now that I've got where it is, I need to go find that node. And how we're going to find that node is we're going to call from the root, go find this token starting where the error occurred, ask the parent, then walk the tree looking for the invocation expression at that location. So I know my analyzer looked for invocation expressions and then was reporting the error on that call to debug.assert. So I know that I've only got one invocation expression here. So I just got to go find the first one in the tree, right? So that gives me the individual invocation expression where there's a problem. So great. Now I've got the invocation expression that I want to fix. That's what we did in that step there. Then the last step here is, well, we've got to go do our async fix. And this is where the code action create comes into play. This is the message, I should internationalize this, but this is the message that gets reported in the error UI saying, you know, in fact, we'll look at the real one here, C#. So here's the error. Right? Add test messages parameters. That's where that comes in. And you can see the fix right there. Then we just do the usual async, and there it is. And I need the document, I need the invocation expression, and I need to use the cancellation token, right? Standard async stuff, right? If you watch Steve Cleary's presentation right before this one, you should be familiar with that. And then finally, okay, we've set all of that up. Let's register and go. So great, the compiler will go off, or the IDE will go off and work with our code fix here. So here's my method doing all of the work. So first thing I need to do, let's go get that. We know it's an invocation expression. Get me the expression syntax for that first piece of code. So if we go back and look at that invocation expression, you know, we can see that I've got expressions down here. Oops, there's my expression. I want to go pull that expression information off of that argument list. And you see, so this is how I access the arguments, and that pulls it in. So there, I've gotten the first parameter, right, the only parameter for this error. And now, what do I want to do? Well, here's the good news. We have this beautiful, beautiful set of work called the Syntax Factory. And, you know, if I had to build up this particular expression, debug.assert, on my own, it would pretty much kill me. Because if I go back, and here's an awesome website here. Oops, get that thing out of the way. And it's called the Roslyn Quoter at roslynquoter.azurewebsites.net. So if what this does is this takes code. Oops, wrong, so I want to just do that. And let's go generate the code for this. What does this look like if, for that code, what kind of tree would be produced? And this is actually, I think, a pretty interesting website because it helps you start understanding where things fit together and whatnot. So this is the code that needs to be generated to do that call right there. Well, I don't want to do that work. I guess I could in here, but the Roslyn team needed the exact same set of work. So they said, hey, here's our syntax factory. That does a lot of work for us. And this parse expression can handle almost anything. And that what that does is it builds up the new expression. So what I've done here is said, okay, do this debug.assert. Notice there's the first parameter. There's the first parameter in quotes. And then say, just go do it for me. Go parse this expression. And it hands me back an expression syntax, right, which is the base class of an invocation expression. So this works. That's all it took for me to say, I want to convert that one parameter version into the two parameter version. Pretty awesome, isn't it? So we could add that node right there and everything would be not good. Okay? So let me show you the most important thing about code fixes. Because if we added this node right now, it would fix the error, right? Would turn that debug.assert single parameter call into a debug.assert multiple parameter call, but it would really upset your users because no formatting is applied. So we put this in here, and what would happen when you add this node back in, it would be on the first column. It wouldn't be properly formatted, right? It wouldn't be indented or anything, right? Maybe you know, you the user using your code wants to put massive numbers of spaces around everything. Maybe that's their coding style. Well, guess what? It would completely ignore all of that. And this was the hardest thing for me to figure out. It's not obvious. I don't understand why Roslyn is this way, the code fixers are this way. But whenever you are going to generate a node that you're going to put back into the tree with annotations called with formatter.annotations. This is the most important thing I'm telling you about code fixes. Because every time I would do a code fix and the formatting was messed up, I was like, what's missing? So without thinking, with additional annotations, the problem is that this with additional annotations, probably the most important thing around, that's not included by default. It's out of the Microsoft.codeanalysis.formatting namespace. So this is super, super important, because now that I have that call, this says format it like the user wants it. That's what that does. And now I'm sure if we ask the Roslyn team, why do they in code fixes, do they not apply the formatting directly? I'm sure we're going to get back a PhD thesis on performance. So I'm sure there's reasons for it. But for you writing a code fix, when in doubt, stick a with additional format, with additional annotations, formatter.annotations on it.
So John, I hate to step in. I need to interrupt because we're getting low on time here. We're going to start doing our poll questions now. Ladies and gentlemen, okay. If you look to the left of your viewing area and select on, there's going to be four polls that will pop up over the next few minutes. And you may want to look at starting to wrap up at this time and then getting ready for questions, because we don't want to leave behind our questions.
I've literally got 1 minute to go here.
Great. Thanks, John.
I'm trying to do a whole lot. Now the last thing we need to do here, now that we've got the node, is we're just going to replace it, and that's all it takes to replace it. So this would do the work and the heavy lifting to do that replacement. And as you can probably guess, unit testing is very, very similar, right? So here's my good fix test. There's my problem one. That's text for that. There's my fixed one, and I call verify C# fix, and that's all there is to it. So any questions? I know I've covered a lot of stuff here, and I know Jamie's been answering questions for me, and I really appreciate that, but I really wanted to cram in as much as I could here so that you kind of saw the whole process. Just to remind folks that, if you want to see, many of these are open source here. You can look at my Wintellect.analyzers. You can look at Sam Harwell's awesome StyleCop analyzers for a bunch of ideas and a bunch of rules. So are there any questions? I have on my other machine the question manager thing up here. Yeah. Okay. Are the turquoise dots that is? I see a question here. Are the turquoise dots for space in Visual Studio an add-in? No. What I did in Visual Studio is I went to options and I went into text editor, and somewhere in here, general, somewhere in here you can say add show white space. It's an option in Visual Studio, and I find it incredibly familiar. Okay. Great question here. ReSharper had to build their own Lexer parser prior to Roslyn. Can they continue to leverage their own custom ones or move to take advantage of Roslyn ones? Well, ReSharper has invested a tremendous amount of time in their parser. So I'm sure, I don't know anybody at ReSharper. They could write, they could do most of ReSharper with Roslyn. But I'm sure it's one of these things that they've invested so much time in it that they've announced that they're not using it right now with the 9.1. But they could rewrite most of ReSharper in it. But yeah, it is a disadvantage, but they started many, many years ago, and they've done a very good job, and many people can't run without ReSharper, so it's pretty cool. Yeah, do these analyzers complement add-ins like ReSharper or replace them? They complement. Because if you're using ReSharper has many, many more features, right? Totally valuable piece of software. So they complement ReSharper. Many of the guys I work with at Wintellect, they're ReSharper addicts, but they're starting to use the Wintellect.analyzers, so they complement each other very well. Yeah, you need the VS SDK, as I mentioned in the slides right here. You guys have access to all of these slides. Here's all the pieces that you need, and you definitely need to have the VS SDK to get that to work. How do you avoid getting analyzers that overlap and fight each other? Boy, that's an excellent question. You can always go into the project. Let's get my C-sharp project up here. And you can change the rule. You can change it to hidden. Okay, so that's how, if you've got two analyzer packages that are fighting with one another, you hide them there. So it becomes a configuration option, but you have to do it manually. But yeah, if you've got five analyzers that look for debug.assert, all of them are going to show up. So you get to pick the one that's got the thing. Okay. So great, that looks like all the questions. Let me scroll down to the bottom. Yeah, will analyzers break backwards compatibility with Visual Studio 2013 because the project file formats go back and forth? I haven't tested that. So whoever asked that question, why don't you DM me on Twitter or send me an email, and we can work through it. I suspect it. I don't know. I would have to try it. But it does work. That's right. It does work with, Jamie. Roslyn, there is a Roslyn plugin for Visual Studio 2013. I don't know if it's updated to the same thing that's in the RC. So that's what we would have to test with. Okay. Great. Before we end here, thank you all very much. Let me put my contact information up and Jamie's as well. So thank you very much, everyone. I appreciate it.